Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Masechta Shabbos is daf Tzadi Vav. We're up to 96. We're not up to 96. We're on 95. We're going to get to 96 today. Finish, God willing, the 10th parak and start the 11th parak of Shabbos. We leave ourselves off from yesterday's daf with a little bit of Tamar Dahar discussion that really bounced off the Mishnah on the bottom of Tzadi Hey Amud Av. The Mishnah taught us, Atolish Me'atzitz Nakov. There's a difference between a pot that has perforations and a pot that does not have perforations, right? The holy pot. The pot that has perforations assumes that the yanika, its sustenance, comes from the ground. Even if it's not on the ground itself, even if it's suspended in air. But but we've learned time and again throughout the Gemara that the way that we view it is that there's communication between the ground and the pot. If the pot is, in fact, perforated, if it's a holy pot. And so therefore, all the seeds that are growing in that pot, all the plant that's growing in that pot, is considered connected to the ground. It's mechubal karka. And so therefore, it attains the status of mechubal karka. So we're talking about in terms of Shabbos. So that means on Shabbos, if I pull a plant out of the ground on Shabbos, that's one of the malachas on Shabbos, that's kotzer. So if I pull a plant out of the pot, that's also going to be kotzer as well. Masha inkein, if the pot does not have any perforations in it, if it's just a simple pot with no holes in it, so therefore, it's not considered connected to the ground. So thereby pulling a plant out of that pot is not a malach on Shabbos. It would be asr, says the Mishnah, potter aval asr, but it's not a malach on Shabbos because it's not connected to the ground. That's the opinion of the Tanakama, which is the position which we accept. Rabbi Shimon disagrees. Rabbi Shimon's potter bezer vezer. Rabbi Shimon says a pot is not connected to the ground, whether it's holy or whether it's not holy. It does not matter. The pot is not connected to the ground. The Gemara yesterday tempered a little bit the statement of Rabbi Shimon, and that is that there's one exception he's going to make to that rule that even a holy pot is not connected to the ground, and that's by Hechsher Zeraim. In order for any food to become tummy, it first needs to become susceptible to water, and it has to come as susceptible. Sorry, wrong words. In order for any food to become tummy, it has to come into contact with water or any of the other seven liquids. But it has to come into contact with water only after it's detached from the ground. Only after it's detached from the ground. So in this regard, in terms of Hechsher Zrayim, so Rabbi Shimon sees the difference between a holy and an unholy pot, where the holy pot, according to Rabbi Shimon, is considered connected to the ground, vis-a-vis Hechsher Zrayim. So that means that any seeds growing inside this pot is considered grounded, and therefore not able to be Mukhshal HaKabal Tumah. Whereas if the pot is not holy, so it's therefore considered detached from the ground and therefore susceptible to Hechsher Zrayim. Okay? And why should that be different? Why is the world of Hechsher Zrayim different according to Rabbi Shimon? So it's a drasha. He learns it out from the Pasuk where the Torah says the word Zer Zarua Asher Yizareya, adding the word Zer one more time. So he learns it out as a special drasha. Okay, that's all we saw yesterday. We're on Tzadi Hamud Beis. We're at the top of the Amud. And we are continuing in the Gemara about three lines from the top.
According to Tanakhama, do you have a size of the hole or not? Well, any size hole?
Oh, we're gonna. No? But that's gonna be the rest of the daf today. It's fine. Okay. By minei ausaba me Rabbi Zera. So an elderly person goes over to Rabbi Zera and asks him the following question: Shosh keneged negev mali. All right. Well, let me ask you this: what if there's a hole in the pot and the shorish is keneged negev? So the root is now facing the hole. Or let's say the root is like basically in the hole. So now, according to Rabbi Shimon, Mali Amar Rabbi Shimon, what would Rabbi Shimon say over there? Meaning, because again, Rabbi Shimon says there's no difference between a holy pot and a holy pot. They're always considered disconnected. So the Gemara says, but what if the root is kind of like basically, I don't want to say touching the ground, but even more contact with the ground, more communication with the ground. Would Rabbi Shimon change his position over there? Ishik v'lam alei v'lam midi. Now, the Rabbi Zera didn't have an answer. I don't know. So he didn't even say, I don't know. Just was quiet. Zimna chadash kechad yasav v'kamar. Now, happens to be that Rabbi Zera was giving shir, and in shir, Rabbi Zera made the following statement. Umode Rabbi Shimon shim nikev bechdei taraso. Rabbi Shimon would agree that if the hole in the pot is a gaping hole, it's really big, so then there, even Rabbi Shimon would say that there's communication between the earth in the pot and the earth on the ground, and therefore Rabbi Shimon would tell you it's grounded. All the contents of the pot is considered as if it's in the ground. Okay. This is what this is a statement made by Rabbi Zeira, meaning there is going to be a breaking point where Rabbi Shimon is going to agree with the Chachamim. So now this elderly man who asked the question earlier and didn't get an answer from Rabbi Zeira is a little bit offended. Hashta shorish keneged nekev by minach v'lo martli v'lo midi nekev bechtei tarasu mibaye. I don't understand. If in this scenario where there's a hole in the pot, and we'll describe the size of the hole in just a moment, but there's a hole in the pot, and you're telling me that even Rabbi Shimon there would say it's grounded, I seem to be asking a much easier question, where there you can actually see the root of the plant in the pot exposed. So it would seem to be that if a hole in the pot creates communication between the pot and the ground, so if you could see the root of the plant in the pot, you don't think that's a no-brainer? So he was a little bit offended. So Amar Abaye, the Itmar Lahad Rabbi Zera Hachi Huda Itmar. So Abaye would like to try to give a little more context to this whole discussion. It says, you know, I don't think that's what Rabbi Zera said. Now, I'm not really sure in terms of who exactly is dialoguing with who. I'm a little bit unclear about that. But in other words, basically what we're going to do is we're going to take Rabbi Zera's statement and we're going to modify it a little bit. And that's not what Rabbi Zera says as Abaye, but what Rabbi Zera says is the following. Umoda Rabbi Shimon, Shimnikev Lamata Mirvius. Ah. It's not that if there's a hole in the pot, so Rabbi Shimon's going to agree. No, not necessarily. If there's a hole in the pot, Rabbi Shimon still, I'm sorry. Rabbi Zera is unsure what Rabbi Shimon would say if there's a hole in the pot. Rabbi Zera is unsure even if there was a root coming out of that hole. He's still unsure. The only time where Rabbi Zera says, I know Rabbi Shimon has a breaking point, and that breaking point is if there's a hole in the pot and it's lamata merivis, meaning we have a pot. Now, basically, what we're discussing is at what point is there a definitive communication between the earth in the pot and the earth on the ground. Now, again, according to the Chachamim, any hole creates communication, which is the position we accept. Okay, but according to Rabbi Shimon says, no, that's not true. Even a holy pot is considered detached and disconnected from the ground. Essentially now what the Gemara is saying, this is Abaye's understanding of Rabbi Zeira, is that even Rabbi Shimon will have his breaking point, and that is, if the hole in the pot is on the bottom portion of the pot, the bottom portion that holds the first revius of, if we poured liquid into the pot, would be holding the first revius of liquid, essentially the bottom part of the pot. If there's breakage on that bottom part of the pot, and that pot is over the ground, even Rabbi Shimon would say that there is communication between the pot and the ground, and all the contents of the pot are grounded. It's only when there's a hole on the side of the pot Rabbi Shimon is going to argue. This is Abaye's understanding of Rabbi Zeira, and that's why, according to Abaye, Rabbi Zeira didn't know what would be the din if there was a hole in the side of the pot. He didn't know what the din would be if there's a root jutting out of the side of the pot. The only thing he's sure about is if there's a gaping hole in the bottom of the pot, even Rabbi Shimon would be modem.
Rabbi Shimon basically is saying, is a hole big enough so it's not a keli anymore?
Right.
That's what it is. So, and that's why it's taught.
Essentially.
That's why it's taught. Right. Otherwise, what would it be taught?
Correct. In other words, once it loses the shame kli, then there's communication between the pot and the ground. Okay, and with this, we're going to finish up. I should say, the 10th parak. Amar Rava. Chamesh midos b'kli cheres. Now, we're talking about an earthenware utensil, and now, just for the next, let's say, 15 minutes, straight Tum of a Tara talk. Meaning we are now exiting the world of Shabbos totally, and now we're just talking about the basics of Tum and Tahara. Now, the basics of Tum and Tahara, so anytime a Kli has function, it's Mekabel Tum. Once a Kli loses its function, it's no longer Mekabel Tum. Furthermore, we could even say it's stronger. Even if a Kli were Tume, and it loses its functionality, the Tum goes away. Okay, now by a Kli Cheres, the Kli Cheres is a little bit different, operates a little bit different than a wood Kli or a metal Kli. Kli Cheres, earthenware, it's pottery. The story behind Kli Cheres is that once it breaks, it breaks. Right? Unlike metal you could just simply fire it up, you know, bang it back into place again. Metal's fixable, right? If that's a word. But that's not true by Kli Cheres. Kli Cheres, once it breaks, it's broken. So basically, we have a higher tolerance level for what is considered a break in a Kli Cheres. Meaning, even if there's a hole in it, we're not going to get rid of it. Even if the hole's a pretty sizable hole, we're still not going to get rid of it. It has to be totally out of commission, totally out of disuse, in order for a Kli Cheres to no longer be called a Kli. And as we're going to go now through the upcoming Gemaras, we're basically going to give five different levels in terms of sizes of holes and how it's going to affect the Kli Cheres. Okay? You'll see all this inside. The Gemara starts off, Amar Rav HaChamish Midos B'Kli Cheres. There are five levels of a Kli Cheres. Let's go. Number one. Nikev Kamotzi Mashke Tahor Melatame Gistera V'Adayin Hi Kli Lekash Bo Mechatos. First of all, let's start off with the hole being tiny. It's such a tiny hole that liquid can come out, but if I try to put liquid into the hole, it's not going to work. Meaning that when I pour liquid into this Kli Cheres, the pressure of the liquid, it's going to start dripping out. But if I turn the liquid over and I pour water, running water over the top, so the liquid's not going to come in. Okay, so this is a really tiny hole. So does it affect its status as a Kli Cheres? Essentially, no. Not at all. Meaning it's still a Kli Cheres. I can even use it, says the Gemara, says Rava, even to be Mekash Mechatas, right? In order to go through the process of being Metar somebody from Tumas Mace. So what we do is we mix together in a Kli, right? The Torah says, Maim Chaim El Keli. We mix together in a Kli the water of the Maim Chaim, spring water, together with the Afer Paraduma, with the ashes of Paraduma. And I can even mix it in this Kli, even though it's got a little leak, and even though some of the water is going to drip out, it's fine. It is a Kli. The only thing it will affect it is in terms of the Halach of Gistera. What's the Halach of Gistera? The Halach of Gistera is when a Kli breaks, so there are the remaining shards. If the remaining shards of a Kli Cheres still have a Toch, still have an inside, so it still has functionality and it will still serve as a Kli. However, the shard, the pottery shard, once it develops a hole, and the hole could be of any size, even the small hole which we're speaking about, where only the liquid's going to leak out, I can't even get liquid in, at that point in time, we throw it away. The Gemara on Sadi Vav, which we're going to see later this morning, is essentially going to tell us, once you have a shard, I have zero tolerance for any type of hole when it comes to a shard, so I throw it away. So that's the only thing this hole is going to affect. But if it's talking about the original Kli itself, a hole, we can totally tolerate it. It still has a shame Kli. Number two, Nikev Kikones Mashke. This hole is a little bit bigger. The water now is not only seeping to the outside, but also this leak would allow water to come inside as well. So it's a slightly larger hole. Torah Melakadosh B'Mechatas. It can no longer be used for Mechatas, because the Torah demands that for the Mechatas, I need Mayim Chayim El Keli. I have to put in a Kli. So once this has lost its hole, it doesn't have the same Kli for the Paraduma. In the rest of the world of Tuman Tahara, it's still a Kli, but Adayin Kli Hu La'achshir Bozrayim. And furthermore, if let's say I have this Kli over the ground, and so it's got a tiny little hole in it, that tiny little hole does not create communication between the content of the pot and the ground. The content of the pot is not considered grounded, and so therefore, if liquid comes onto the plant in the pot, it's mukshar lekabel tuma. Number three, nikev kesharish katan, tar melahachshir bo zraim. Now, let's say the hole in here is a little bit bigger now. A root of the plant can actually jut out through this hole. It's funny, the Gemara gives us shears, and it tries very hard to quantify for us what the size of the shear is, but it does so in terms of quantities of function, not in terms of actual linear measurements. So, but I venture to guess that these are actually objective linear measurements, and the Gemara is just explaining to us through an example. But anyway, linear melahachshir bo zraim v'adayin kli u'lekabel bo zeisim. Okay, now this kli has a hole in it where the root of a plant can jut out. So now, is it a kli? Sure, it's still a kli. However, because now a root can jut out, there is communication between the contents of the pot and the ground below it, and therefore it's grounded. And because it's grounded, if liquid comes on the plant that's in the pot, it's not mukshar lekabel tuma, because all the contents of the pot are considered attached to the ground. Number four, nikev kamotzi zeisim. The hole is big enough now where olives can escape this pot. So I got a hole in the pot right now in my earthenware pot where I put the olives in. The olives fall out through this hole. Okay. At this point in time, essentially now, it is of no function. This kli right now, I know I can hold larger items in this, and we're going to get to that in just a moment. But for the most part, however, basically, you ask me, throw it away. And not just me, but the general public will tell you, yeah, it's time to get rid of it. There's nothing to do with it. So Nikiv Kamotzi Zesim Tarm L'Kabal Bo Zesim V'adainu Kli L'Kabal Bo Rimonim. However, if I say, you know, don't throw it away, it's a nice earthenware pot. And what are you going to do with it? Well, it could still hold pomegranates, okay, which is obviously a much larger fruit. So if I say that, so I can reassign it as a kli. Meaning, essentially what the Gemara is saying is that the general public and the vast majority of people would throw it away. And so therefore, once it can no longer can hold olives, it's not makabel tuma. However, for the person who says, it's kind of like the idea we talked about a little bit earlier in the Masechta regarding the Hamatznia by the beginning of the 10th parak. Meaning, but for the person who says, I want to retain it and use it for pomegranates, he can now give this kli status, and it will have status in terms of being a kli. And finally, Nikev Mimotzi Rimonim Tar Miklom, once a hole is so big where the pomegranate falls out of this earthenware utensil, done and done. Meaning nobody can give it status anymore, even if, let's say he says, I'm going to hold it for watermelons. In other words, it's Vala Daita Eitzel Kol Adam, that's it. Now, the pomegranates is the largest size fruit where we're going to say that this has any use whatsoever.
Okay.
Huh?
And now it becomes a gistera?
And now it becomes, if it has a toch. If it has a toch, it'll be a gistera. But then, right. But then as a gistera, then it has its own shear of the neck. Okay. It, right. We're together on this. Now, him hukav tzamid psil, achi paches rubo. Okay, now we get bonus round. Bonus round over here is, even though we said they're going to be five, but we're going to add one more halacha to our earthenware utensil. Okay, earthenware utensil, the Torah is very clear in Parshas Chukas. If there's a cover, if there's a seal on the top of the earthenware jug, so it is impervious to tumah. There's a house, and there's a mace in the house, and there's a kli cheres inside of the house. And the kli cheres has a lid on the top, so imagine the cookie jar with the lid on the top, and it's sealed. I don't know if that means it has to be glued together. I don't think so, but... and it's sealed. So then, all the contents of the pot and the pot itself are impervious to tumah. Why? Right, it's basically rule number one by Kli Cheres. Kli Cheres only becomes Tamei Mi Tochol, only from the inside, not from the outside. So once I have a sealed lid on the top of the pot now becomes impervious to Tama. That we knew already. Here's the big chiddush that comes out of today's daf. Even if there's a hole on the side of the pot, now here's a big chiddush, meaning there's a lid on the top, but there's a hole on the side. And we're going to say it even stronger. Even if the hole's a sizable hole, I'm going to read the Gemara again. How big a hole are we talking about? V'imhuk of tzami psil achi paches rubo. Even if the majority of the side of the pot is exposed and open to the airspace of the room, it doesn't matter. The lid on the very top is what creates that barrier, that protection for tumah. And so it's odd. I mean, if we can try to visualize this, I have a kli cheres, an earthenware pot, where the lid on the top is fine, totally undisturbed. And on the side of the pot, you have a hole. So I'm looking at the contents of what's inside the kli cheres. The contents are still tahor. They're not tamei. Even though there's a mace in this room. And even though the tumas hamace is spread out through the entire room. And all of the kelim in this room are going to become tamei. But this kli cheres with the sealed lid on top, even though it's exposed from the side, it's going to be tahor. Now, why should that be? So Rashi explains, because the kli cheres's tumah, its contraction of tumah, has to come in through the regular opening. Meaning, if there is an opening on the side, that's not a regular opening. That's a break in the kli cheres. That's not where tumah enters. Tumah enters only from the top. And since the top is sealed, so therefore tumah does not come in. So that's that is our bonus halacha of the day. I'm Rabbi Asi, Shamati Kli Cheres Shiur Kamotzi Rimon. I heard that a Kli Cheres, the Shiur is a Motzi Rimon, it's the size of a pomegranate. Amalei Rava, Hashem Elo Shamati, Ala Bamukav Tamid Psil. No, what do you mean, Motzi Rimon? Maybe Motzi Rimon is in terms of a sealed earthenware jug. Maybe that's where you heard Motzi Rimon. Because as we learned earlier, an earthenware pot loses its functionality. At what point exactly? at Zayas, at the size of an olive. The Gemara points out, but wait a second. How can you tell me that the halacha of the size of a hole the size of a pomegranate has to do with the earthenware jug with the lid on the top? Did Rava not just teach us that with an earthenware with a lid on the top, it will not become susceptible to tumah until the majority of the side is exposed? So the Gemara's answer is habaravri habizutre. So the Gemara says it depends on the size of the pot. If the pot is big, right, that's the Gemara's Rav Ravi. So then you need a gaping hole on the side. How big? Rubo. If the pot is small, so, right, Zutre, so then what size hole are we talking about? Rimon, the size of a pomegranate. So in other words, Rava's halacha is for a large pot, and this halacha that we just quoted of the hole of a pomegranate is for a small pot. Why there should be a difference between the two, unclear. Between a big earthenware jug and a small earthenware jug, vis-a-vis this halacha. As for Rashi, assigning that the halacha of rubo is for the large pot, and the halacha of pomegranate hole is for the small pot, you can see Tosos right alongside Rashi. He disagrees with Rashi. He reverses it. Okay, so obviously there's much more to talk about right now, but we're going to go on in the Gemara. Amar Rav Asi teaches us we're on the top of Tzadivav Amar Aleph. Shonin. We have learnt, we have a tradition. The following brayso was taught. Kli cheres shiuro b'koneis mashka. When it comes to kli cheres, the shear is the shear of koneis mashka. Not just water coming out, but water being able to come in, as we described earlier this morning. That's a slightly larger hole. V'lo amar motzi mashka ela lingi gistera. Now, as far as water just leaking out, that's a shear, but only for a pottery shard. Bilvad, my time, I'm a marzucha, braid, Rav Nachman, lefishin omrim, have a gistra, le gistra. Because the pottery shard, look, it's already recycled. It's already recycled pottery. And now it's got a hole in it. At this point in time, it has a leak. I'm not going to say, oh, let's save it. In other words, it already has one leg in the grave, so to say. You'll forgive me for the reference. But now it's got a tiny hole in it. Done. Or it's out. Amarula pligi batrei amarai b'marav. In Eretz Yisrael, they had the following debate amongst the marayim. Rav Yossi bar Avin, Rav Yossi bar Zavda. Charamar kamotzi rimon, v'charamar kishorish katan. They're having a debate in terms of how size, what kind of hole we're talking about. The hole the size of a pomegranate, or the hole the size of ishorish katan of a small root. What are they actually talking about? Meaning, vis-a-vis what? Losing its status as a kli. So Rashi over here says that we're talking about hechsher zrayim. We're talking about the shear in terms of when it's grounded versus when it's not grounded. And just a helpful mnemonic way to remember, it is one is large and the other is small. Right? Big difference between a size holding just a root versus a hole being able to have a pomegranate to be able to go through. I'm Rav Chinah bar Kanim Shnei de Rabbi Elazar Kli Cheres Shira Kemotzei Zesim. Kli Cheres the Shira is Motzei Zesim. Once an olive can escape the hole on this Kli Cheres, done and done, it's no longer Kli Cheres. Umar Kashisha Bre de Rabbi Messiah Bam Shnei de Rabbi Elazar Varein Kekli Gagalim Kli Avanu Kli Adama Shei Mekablim Toma Lo Medivri Torah Lo Medivri Sofrim. It's not Mekabel Toma at all. Not on a Torah level, not on a Derabbanan level. It now essentially has the status of clay galalim, a clay made out of animal dung. Now, as far as this halacha of tamid psil, where it has a lid over the top of it, and it's a sealed lid, so all the contents of this pot are going to be tahor, even if there's a hole on the side, even if it's a gaping hole on the side, even if until the majority of the site is exposed, it's going to protect the contents of the Kli Cheres, where it's no longer going to be Mekabel Tuma. That is the end of the 10th paragraph of Shabbos. I know we ended with a lot of Tuma Tahara, but it came off the Mishnah, which talked about the Halachas of Shabbos. What if I have a perforated plant, and I pick and I uproot from the pot itself, so what becomes of Hilcha Shabbos? So the halacha is, and this is the accepted halacha, that if it's a holy pot, so then it's considered as if it's connected to the ground, it is grounded, and so therefore you mechal Shabbos. That's a halacha of Kotzer. If it's not a holy pot, it's considered now detached, then midaraisa, it's not a violation of a halacha, And mid the Rabbanan, it is asr. Okay. We start now the 11th parak of Shabbos. 11th parak of Shabbos, we are now formally and officially back in the world of Hotzah. I told you this was coming some time ago, and in fact, from the beginning of the parak. In fact, the Gemaras that we're going to be learning over the next week or so in the 11th parak are going to be very complementary to the first parak that we did. First parak that we did, the first eight blot of Masechta Shabbos, from Beis until Ches, including Ches, all had to do with the Malach of Hotzah. So now, so that was eight blot of Hotzah right there, and seven, right? No Daf Aleph. And over here, another week of Hotzah, the Malach of Hotzah. Now, I know it sounds like we've been talking about Hotzah a lot. I've made the argument Hotzah is the most popular topic in the Masechta. Perhaps one of the reasons why, as you'll see in today's daf, is because Hotzah is a malacha gerua. Tosfos says it. Tosfos says it on the first daf of Masechta Shabbos. Tosfos will say it a bunch of times in today's daf as well. Malacha gerua means it's an inferior malacha. Okay? Right. What's the inferiority with the malacha of Hotzah? So like we described in the beginning of the Masechta. Because, what am I doing? Meaning in terms of a creative act. I'm not planting something. I'm not cooking something. I'm not really making any type of effective change in an item. All I am doing is just simply moving an item from point A to point B. And that's creative? And that's a malacha? Now the answer is yes, it is. But that's why Tosfos says it's a malacha gerua. Now, practically, what does that mean? It's a lesser malacha. Meaning, it's still a capital crime. If a person does a malacha v'otzah, he's chayev. So chayev means that if he did it b'mezin, it's skila. If he did it b'shogeg, it's a karban chatas. So, in other words, you got to put it in context. When Tosfos says it's a malacha gerua, it's an inferior malacha. Right. The penalty is not different. Right. But in other words, I guess in terms of how much discussion we're going to give it, we're going to give it a lot more discussion. And by the way, not only is it the topic of a lot of Masechta Shabbos, it also will be the topic of a Malam Masechta Erevin. Okay? So in other words, if you haven't had enough yet of Hotzah, cannot get enough of it, don't worry. We have Erevin coming up, and we're going to have Hotzah there as well. We are going to talk about Hotzah now, not in the classic context of carrying an item from one point to another, but other forms of Hotzah. You'll see what I mean. The Mishnah starts off, Hazorik Mirshos Yachid L'Rishos HaRabim, Mirshos HaRabim L'Rishos Yachid Chayev. So the first thing the Mishnah teaches us is that there's a malacha of Zorik, meaning not just transporting, carrying an item from point A to point B, but even throwing an item as well. You throw an item more than four amos, or you throw an item from one rishos to another rishos, that's also part of the malacha of Otzah.
Even though you didn't do an anacha yourself.
You did an anacha. You didn't place the item down, but the act of throwing includes... Right, it includes the akira, it includes anacha. Agreed, yes. What if I throw from one Rishos HaYachid to another Rishos HaYachid and there's a Rishos HaRabim in the middle? Now, for Rishos HaRabim into the middle, so the classic example would be there are two houses on two sides of the street, and so I threw it. And it's a good throw. Right? In other words, the Rishos HaRabim is 16 Amas, so it doesn't have to be this configuration. I'm just giving us all a visual so that we can all see it in our mind. So you're standing on one house, you're throwing it to the other house on the other side of the street. Street 16 amas wide, so you're talking about a good 30 foot throw, okay? 10 yard pass, if you will. I know, or if right,
football season.
Yeah. So you're talking about a good 10 yard pass. That's not that big a deal. So easy for me to say. So Rishus Yachir, Rishus Yachir, Rishus Rambam Emtsa. So now Rabbi Kiva Mechayv, Rabbi Kiva has a very interesting opinion, which is he just violated the Malacha of Otzah. What? How did that work? Meaning you went from Rishos HaYachid to Rishos HaYachid. So Rabbi Akiva, we talked about this earlier. We will talk about this again in the 11th parak of Shabbos. Rabbi Akiva has an interesting position, which is, it's kluta. It is absorbed. I don't know how else to say it. There's no good English word for this. It is absorbed in the Rishos HaRabim. It's legally as if it took a stop in the Rishos HaRabim. And so therefore, even though its trajectory has not changed one bit, and therefore it's viewed as if it went from the Rishos HaYachid to the Rishos HaRabim, from the Rishos HaRabim back to the Rishos HaYachid. Okay, and we'll talk more about Rabbi Akiva later on in the parak. The Chachamim Potrim, the Chachamim say no, they don't subscribe to this idea of Kluta. Ketzad, Now, shtei gezuz tra'ot zu keneged zu. And now the rest of this Mishnah is now going to be talking about passing on the balconies. I have two balconies, zu keneged zu berushos harabim. Hamoshi v'azork mizu lazu potter. If I either throw or pass from one side to the other, I will be potter. There is a deliberate pause, sorry. For those listening at home, there's a deliberate pause. I wonder if I have a marker. I thought I had one. Yes, I do. Okay. I'm good. All right. Let's see this on the board. Okay, this is our Rishus HaRabim. And I'm going to have a Rishus HaYachar on this side, a Rishus HaYachar on that side. And let's do it like this. Let's give ourselves another Rishus HaYachar as here as well. So Rishus HaYachar, Rishus HaYachar. Now what I'm drawing over here is from a bird's eye view. And these things over here, you know what, let's do it this way. I went in the wrong direction. They're balconies. Let's put them right over the Rishus HaRabim. Okay. Now, if I threw from this balcony to this balcony, it's not to Machlokas. Machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim. Rabbi Akiva would say, you're Machayev, because you went through Rishus HaRabim. And the Chachamim would say, no, you're not, because you didn't stop in the Rishus HaRabim. Good. And what we're about to learn is the following. If I pass from here to here, pass. It's what we're going to call Moshit. So the Chachamim say, you're going to be Chayev on Melech HaShabbos. Okay, now why should that be? So, let's go back to a time where we had a Mishkan. Now, in the Mishkan, we traveled in the desert. We did so for 40 years. You probably heard the story. It's called Sefer Bamidbar. Yeah? So and what we did is every time we traveled, so what we would do is we would disassemble the Mishkan, and Levi was divided into three families. So based on the three sons of Levi, so Merari, the tribe of Merari, were in charge of the crushing, the beans. And what they were given is they were given four wagons. Right? I'll even make little wheels on the wagon so you see the direction. So they were given four wagons. And in these four wagons, they loaded up all the crushim of the Mishkan. So these were big, big beams that were basically passed. Now, the way they would do it is as follows. It sounds like we are in the transport business, and we are. And so basically now what would happen is that as they would disassemble the beams, so they would load up the first wagon. But then what they would do is, now this area over here we're going to call Rishus HaRabim. The wagons themselves, each one of them are a Rishus HaYachid. Movable, but so what? In other words, they have the dimensions of a Rishus HaYachid. And so the beam would be passed to the first wagon, and then he would pass it backwards to this wagon. And the same thing would happen over here. What they would not do, however, it was they would not pass it over from the east wagon to the west wagon. They would only pass it back and never to the side. And based on that historical event, so now essentially what we're learning in our Mishnah is that in the similar configuration that they had in the Mishnah with the wagons, they would have in terms of the Melech HaShabbos. If I passed Moshit, if I passed an item from one Rishus HaYachid to another Rishus HaYachid, in a vertical pattern, like over here, so then you'd be chayiv. If I passed across the Rishus HaRabim, I would not be chayiv, I'd be pater. Because they would never pass in the across, they would only pass up and down. That is essentially what we're about to learn in the Mishkan. Furthermore, because they were talking about big beams, so therefore they were always passed. They weren't thrown. These aren't small items. So they were always passed. So therefore, in terms of this specific malacha of Moshit, the malacha is only engendered if I pass it from one balcony to the next, but not if I throw an item from one balcony to the next. All this is in the Mishnah.
It's above 10 tefachim.
The balcony is going to be above 10 tefachim, yes.
So
it's no, the balcony is a Rishus HaYachid.
No, but in between.
In between the area. Very good. Very good. That's an excellent point, and that's part. It's part of the Malach of Moshe. And your point is very well taken. Kate said, let's do this. First, I'm going to read in the sign the Mishnah. Now, I'd love to. We're not going to. I'd love to go through all the Rashis on this on the Mishnah. But basically, if you got everything I just said, that's essentially Rashi. Or everything I said, you know, I paraphrased, obviously. I put it in my words. But everything I said is in Rashi. So please, on your own, do me a favor. Go through the Rashis inside. It basically describes what I just described on the board. Okay. If they were on one side of the street, Hamoshit Chayev. If I passed from one balcony to the next, I'd be Chayev. Hazorek Pater. But if I threw it, I'd be Pater. Shekach Chayesav. What is the Levim? This is how the Levim loaded up the wagons. Shteagalazu Acharzu. Two wagons, one in front of the other, Bereshos HaRabim, in the Bereshos HaRabim, Moshitim HaKarashim, Mizulazu of Alo Zarkin. They would pass the beams from one to the other, but they would not throw the beams from one to the other. So this very specific malacha, we're going to give it a new name, it's called Moshit. This very specific malacha of Moshit is when I pass from one balcony to the other. But it has two limitations. Number one, it has to be a pass, it cannot be a throw. Number two, it has to be B'diuta Achas. It has to be on the same side of the building, and it's not passing across from one to the other. Okay, we start our Gemara on the now on the top of Sadi Vav Amud Beis. Mechdei Zrika Tolada Dautzahu. Where are we going to file Zrika? So we're going to have to file it under the Malacha of Hotzah. And for a very simple reason. We got nowhere else for it to go. It's certainly, in other words, we know we have 39 Malachas to work with. So we have 39 categories. We just got nowhere else to fit it. So obviously, by just process of elimination, it's not planting, it's not plowing, it's obviously part of Hotzah. So the Gemara says, Hotzah gufa hecha ksiva. How do we know about the Malach of Hotzah? Now that is a very funny question of the Gemara. Where do we know about the Malach of Hotzah? Let me add to the Gemara's question. Where do we know about the Malach of planting? Where do we know about the Malach of stitching? In other words, where is any Malach? Well, the malachas are found in the Mishnah, in Masechet Shabbos, 7th Parak, 2nd Mishnah. Meaning, what do you mean, Hecha Ksiva, where is it written in the Torah? A malacha needs to be written in the Torah in order for it to be a malacha? No. So what's the Gemara's question? So here we go. Tosos, top Tosos on the Amud. Hotzah Gufa Hecha Ksiva Va'af Agav Shaisa B'Mishkan Kida Amar Hemaridu Karashi Me'agala. It was part of the Mishkan. It was a part of the assembly of the Mishkan. And like all assemblies of the Mishkan, it's just part of the corpus of Torah Shabbat Peh. So what is even the Gemara's question? Where is it written in the Torah? Mikamakom, we love the chsiv, lo have mechayev. Allah, lefisha malacha gurui, he could appear shalael. So Tosfos says, I'm going to remind you what I told you on day one of the Masechta, and here I get to say it again. Had it not been, let me start the sentence a little differently. Because the malacha of Hotzah is a malacha grua, had it not been written in the Torah, it wouldn't register. Because of its inferiority, the Torah needs to fortify it with a pasuk. And without a pasuk, it simply will not have the force of a malacha. So we know, therefore, because it's an inferior malacha, that it has to be located in the Torah. Where do we find it? Hotzah gzufa hecha ksiva. Am Rav Yochanan amakra, v'itzah Moshe v'yavir kol b'machaneh. Moshe was asking for contributions, right? The first appeal in Jewish history. And he was asking for contributions, and it was a successful appeal. People were giving. In fact, not only were people giving enough already, meaning we're good. Can you imagine? So Moshe v'yavir kol b'machaneh, and the word went out for everyone to stop giving. Now, I described it as he asked people to stop giving because enough already, meaning we have enough. The Gemara is not going to understand it that way. The Gemara is going to understand that he told people to stop giving. Why? Because it's Shabbos. And you're not allowed to carry from your house to where I am right now. He was situated in the Rishos HaRabim. The Gemara goes on to explain, the Kamaluli Yisrael. And he's telling the Jewish people, Lo safika v'teisim rishos yachid didchu, the Rishus Rabbim, don't take it from your Rishus Yachid to where I'm standing, or Rishus Rabbim. Umimai de b'Shabbos Kaina, the Gemara now wants to know, how do we know that this occurred on Shabbos? Dilma b'chol kai, maybe this was just instructions that were given during the week, or mishum d'shlimu la malacha. And for the very simple reason that we're done, complete, we have enough. So the Gemara says, it's an argument, but we have Gzeres Shavah. Right, that is the blowing of the shofar that occurs on the Yovel year, but what day of the Yovel year? Yom Kippur of the Yovel year. So just like over there contextually, we know that Havar is referring to Yom Kippurim, which is the day of Esther. So too, Vayaviru Kol B'machaneh is talking about a Yom Esther. In this case, it would be Shabbos. Ashkechan Osach Nasa Minolan. The Gemara now wants to know, okay, good. So now we have the Melech of Otsah, which is not to carry from your house to the Rishus HaRabim. What about the opposite? What about from Rishus HaRabim to your house? So the Gemara says it's a Svara. Well, can't you make a logical argument? Because obviously what the Torah does not want us to go, do is take from one domain to another domain. What difference does it make whether we go outside or whether we go inside? It all falls under the category of Hotza. But the Gemara says, but look, here's how we're going to categorize it. The Gemara now organizes. The malacha of Hotzah, that means carrying from the Rishus Yach to the Rishus Rabin, that's the Av. That's the main category. Taking from the Rishus Rabin, bringing it into the house, Tolada, subcategory. Umichti, Ahamechayv, Ahamechayv, Amai Karelei Hai Av, Amai Karelei Hai Tolada. To which the Gemara says, and what's the difference? Meaning, why are we categorizing? Okay, this should sound like a familiar question. We've asked this question earlier. What's the purpose of categorizing? We asked this in the 7th Perek. The first daf in Baba Kama also asks this very same question. What's the purpose of categorizing? Nafkamina diavishte avos behade hadade inam ishte talados behade hadade mechayev tarte. Because if I do two separate avos, or if I do two separate tolados, so then I'm going to be chayev two karbanos. The avid av etolad dide, but if I do an av and it's tolada, la mechayev elachad, I'm only going to be chayev one carbon chatas. Ula Rabbi Elazar de Mechayev Atolada b'makom av amai karelei av amai karelei tolada. According to Rabbi Eliezer, who disagrees. Now we don't possibly like Rabbi Eliezer, but we have to answer for Rabbi Eliezer. According to Rabbi Eliezer, who disagrees and says that you are going to bring a carbon on an av and e and its tolada, he segregates them vis-a-vis carbonos. So why then is there what then is the purpose of coming up with an organization chart of Av and Tolada? Hachta Ave b'mishkan chashive karele Av. Hachta lo Ave b'mishkan chashiva lo karele Av. That which is in the Mishkan and is significant is called an Av. That which was not in the Mishkan and is not significant is not called an Av. In other words, essentially, this first answer of the Gemara sounds like nomenclature.
No difference.
Right. There's no practical difference. It just happens to be. Right. Remember your days in biology when you were given all the families and the subfamilies and what's the difference? Huh? Just it's how we organize. So inami hachtiksivikra av hidaloksivikra tolada. Or the Gemara says that which is written in the Torah is called an av, and that which is not written in the Torah is called a tolada. Now obviously the second answer of the Gemara, by the way, is limited to the Malach of Hotzah. Meaning, this distinction of that which is written in the Torah versus that which is not written in the Torah. We can't use this distinction for any of the other Malachas. All the other Malachas are not written in the Torah. Maybe lighting a fire, but, right, I don't know, you know, what's the Tolada of lighting a fire? There's got to be, but offhand I can't think of one. Point being is that this answer over here is going to be an extraordinarily limited answer to just the Malach of Hotzah. Now, the Hadanan is Argalamas because Alamalamiyo, Tvachim Kazarg Bav, Alamatimi, Tvachim Kazarg Baret, Vazarg Baret, Zalamas Chayav. We have a Mishnah later on that talks about the Malach of Zorik. And the truth of the matter is that we're just coming off a Mishnah that talks about the Malach of Zorik. Anyway, the question of the Gemara is Argalamas, Meshurus, Rabbi Menalan. So where do we get this Malach of Zrika? Meaning, every Malach of Hotza'ah and the subcategories of Hotza'ah had to have occurred in the Mishkan. it is not enough to just simply say, well, it's the same, similar. It had to have occurred in the Mishkan. As I just diagrammed on the board regarding the Krushim and how the Krushim were passed from one wagon to another. And therefore we get this Malacha called Moshit. Good. But where was Zorik? And as we already described, they didn't throw the beans. They didn't throw the Krushim. They're too big to throw. So where in the Mishkan, in the terms of the preparation of the Mishkan, do we have this Malacha of Zorik? Minalan de Michayev. And so the Gemara now is going to begin, and we'll do this rather quickly. The Gemara is going to try to describe for us, explain to us, where in the Mishkan there was throwing. I'm Rav Yoshi, Ashken, Orga, Yuriel, Zorik, and Machtin, Zelazeh. Well, you know, the women, when they were weaving, so they were throwing needles one to another. So the Gemara says, Orga, Machtin, Lamaluhu. Well, what do you mean? If they're weaving, they don't got needles. Needles are not for weaving. Needles are for stitching. Elishikain Tofer Yuriel, Zorik, and Machtin, Zelazeh. The Gemara says, fine. The stitchers of the fabric, so they were throwing needles one to another. Now, I would say, by the way, if I had such a work environment, don't throw the needles. But, okay, that's just me trying to be cautious. But anyway, Gemara says, first of all, how far apart were they sitting from one another? You don't know. They were sitting 4 amas away from one another. Maybe they were sitting right next to one another. Matu hadade b'machtehen. The Gemara says, no, they're not sitting right next to one another because then they're just going to poke each other with the needle. The Gemara says, okay, but they were not right next to one another, but can't you say that they were within 4 amas one another? The Gemara gives it another attempt. So what they would do is they would throw the buchyar. I don't know 100% what that is, but in the weaving process, when I throw the shesi, sorry, not the shesi, the eruv, I really don't know what I'm talking about. You'll forgive me. When we're throwing the arrow, that's the horizontal weave through the loom. So I'm throwing basically, I think it's called the shuttle.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. I know what it's called. It holds the spool of thread. So I'm throwing it from one end of the loom to the other end of the loom, and I'm throwing it between the two cards. So that basically now, basically it's part of the weaving process. And so the Gemara says, this is where they were throwing in the Mishkan. So they wish the Gemara says, okay. Okay, but they're throwing an item, but they're still, part of the thread is still in their hand. So they're not throwing an item and the item is out of their hands now. Part of it's still connected to the hand. Benischa Basra, the Gemara says, well, maybe they're throwing it the last time. And so therefore there's no longer any thread connected. The Haba Makam Pater Kazle, it's going through the loom itself. It's not entering into Rishus Rabim, it remains in a Makam Pater. Elishkin or Giriya Zorkin Bukhyar Lisho Alehem. So the Gemara says, well, maybe other women need to borrow the Bukhyar. So they're throwing it to another woman. So Vidilma Gabi Adade Havayasri. Again, the Gemara says, yeah, but you don't know where they're sitting. They're sitting right next to one another. Mate hadadi bechefes. So the Gemara says, well, if they're sitting right next to one another, so they're going to be hitting one another. The Gemara says, well, maybe they sat in a staggered configuration, so they wouldn't be hitting one another. And even the idea that they're borrowing from one another. We're talking about the construction of the Mishkan. When they constructed the Mishkan, they did so in a very organized format. V'atanya luda ish ish mamlachto ish asher hima osim mamlachto hu osav eino osim mamlachas chavero. Meaning it's not just kind of like a scrappy, we put together a band of people and you'll do that, oh, I don't need you over here, okay, you go over there. Each person, when the Malachas HaMishkan, with the construction of the Mishkan, had their own particular job. No one's going to be borrowing a shuttle from one another. So the idea that, oh, could you pass that shuttle, doesn't exist. And also, good, meaning we're trying to work our way through Zorik, which we haven't even done so. And what about passing Dala Amos Bereshos Rabim, Demechayev? Ela Kol Dala Amos Bereshos Rabim, Gemar Gemir Allah. So the Gemara concludes by saying that's part of the Halacha Moshe Misinai. It is simply the tradition that we know that you're chayev on the Malacha of Zorik and on the Malacha of Mavir, of passing something Dala Amos Bereshos HaRabim. Now, does this Gemara Gemirla go all the way back to Moshit? I'm not sure, I'm not clear. Does the Gemara's answer of Gemirla go all the way back to Machnis? I'm not clear about that as well. But in other words, basically, we have it as a tradition. It's not based on any particular event that occurred in the construction of the Mishkan. Okay, we're going to stop over here. I know we have a couple of minutes left, but we are at a good stopping point. Okay, we're almost finished with the daf.
Wow.
Okay. We finished today the 10th parak of Shabbos. That was all Tumat Tahara. The holes in the Klei Cheres, 5 levels of holes in the Klei Cheres that will make a Kli no longer usable for certain actions, but essentially the hole that breaks the Kli Cheres' back is going to be the hole the size of a Zayas. Okay, but I just simplified the whole discussion over there. Only for the person who wants to use it for the pomegranate. But the standard shear is a Zayas. And then we started the 11th parak of Shabbos, and we're back into the Malach of Otsah. But we spoke today about the Malach of Zarek, the Malach of Moshit, the Malach of Ma'avir Da'a Amos Bereshus Rabim. We tried to find sources for that in the construction of the Mishkan. Tried, but wasn't so successful. The Gemara's conclusion, Gemara Gemirala, and we got to speak again today about Malach of Otsah being a Malach of Grua. Okay, that's today's daf. We continue tomorrow, Daf Tzadi Zion. Yeah, for sure. Continue refer Shlema to Binyamin Zev, Cohen Ben Sharon and Rivka, Abichanyan Ben Akash Amar Ratzakash Baruch Zakh Sofi, Achir Ben Tar Mitzvah Shenemar, Mecha Feitz Amatzi Koyak Dil to Rabbi Adir.